I'm Karen Given, and it's time for three stories you should know. We're going to start this week with Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Tyreek Hill, who has not been suspended, despite this audio released back in April of Hill and his ex-fiance arguing about their three-year-old son.
He is terrified of you, and you say that he respects you, but it's not respect.
Me.
It's terrified. He is terrified of you.
You need to be terrified of me, too.
I'm joined by The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman and The Washington Post's Jerry Brewer. Welcome back to both of you.
Great to be here, Karen.
Thanks for having me.
Jerry, you're up first.
Wow. The NFL has long had an issue with the violence of its athletes, and particularly violence toward women. And in this case, you're talking about an allegation of child abuse by Tyreek Hill, one of the best players in the NFL. And his speed makes Kansas City, which may be the favorite to win the Super Bowl, dynamic, electric. It gives them an edge. But keeping with the NFL's inconsistent policies on player conduct, they've decided not to suspend him because they don't have enough evidence. The question is, are they doing the fair thing or are they copping out?
Well, okay, this is what I don't understand. And maybe, Jerry, you can help me out here. NFL contracts generally are not guaranteed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yes. You
know, players can be cut for, you know, not returning their tray at the cafeteria or having less zip on their long snaps or something. So it sort of boggles my mind that when there's an allegation of domestic violence or abuse against children, all of a sudden we have CSI Miami and the NFL and the teams are saying, well, we don't have enough evidence and, you know, this is not the Supreme Court. You have a lot of latitude about what you can do with players. So why not take a strong stand here?
Well, Jerry, I'm going to let you speak to that first because you make the point in your column this week that if the Chiefs didn't pick up Hill, someone else would have, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, a lot of NFL teams use this as a market inefficiency. You know, as a matter of fact, Tyreek Hill is a one-time convicted of domestic abuse. The Kansas City Chiefs still drafted him in the fifth round because they felt like we were getting a first or second round talent in the fifth round. So they use that as a competitive advantage.
Yeah, at this point, I've gotten past being surprised that teams keep hiring these guys because it's happened so many times. I am a little surprised by how quickly journalists and fans seem to have moved on from that audio from Tyreek Hill. Like, let's face it, when movie fans said, we're not going to watch movies with sexual predators in them, Hollywood stopped hiring actors who were sexual predators, at least for now. But the same thing hasn't happened in the NFL. There hasn't been a groundswell of Chiefs season ticket holders saying that they'll give up their tickets if their team continues to employ a guy who may or may not have broken his three-year-old's arm. Jerry, is that what it's going to take for the NFL to come up with some sort of consistent response to this?
Well, I think as much as people challenge authority, you fall in line with accepted behavior by and large. Football is the number one sport in America by a long shot. And if you have a commissioner that's saying, we are concerned about this, but not to the level that we are going to fundamentally change the way we operate in the league, that sends a message to your fans that it's okay to resume business as usual and not care about this issue. And that is the great concern.
All right, Rachel, you're up.
Okay, well, in happier news, the U.S. women's soccer team is back in the U.S. Every player on that team plays in the National Women's Soccer League, which is the current pro league, seventh season under its belt. The games with returning U.S. players have set some attendance records. Portland had 22,000 at its game on Wednesday night. But there is a cautionary tale. Past titles have also helped previous professional women's soccer leagues in the U.S., but inevitably the crowds have sort of fallen off from there. In fact, two previous leagues have folded. And so my question to you guys is, who is responsible this time for making sure this league lasts? Is it the players? Is it league management, which is supported by the U.S. Soccer Federation? Is it the media, which has not historically given a lot of coverage to pro women's soccer? Or is it the fans who, you know, can vote with their pocketbooks?
I think it's all of the above. Speaking about it from a media perspective, you know, this was the story in sports for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back and you get kind of a week of celebration and everybody kind of forgets about it. I do think as these players go back to their teams in the league, that it warrants a little better coverage. However, I think the league has to be better about the way that it promotes itself. And in general, we have to give it time. It's going to take at least 25 years to figure out whether a league can amble on. It's going to take at least 50 years before a league really gets to the point in which it's starting to thrive. So we have to keep that in mind.
I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but certainly that's how long it took for the NFL and all those other leagues to make it really work. We are seeing women's soccer make big strides in popularity in Europe. 20,000 people attended the Champions League final in Hungary this year. But those advances are really being made with the support of their men's sides. Here in the U.S., it's not like there's a huge surplus of money that the MLS can really share. So I wonder if there is an investment to be made into women's soccer in this country, where does the money come from?
Well, I think what you're talking about has happened in small doses here and there. I mean, Portland, for instance, is the absolute gold standard in women's soccer. And I think it's no coincidence that it also has a very robust MLS team in the Portland Timbers. So let's look at the rest of MLS. I mean, Atlanta, certainly. I think they would have a good chance to add a women's side and already have a big fan base built in because the men's team is so popular. So I think that if really ambitious owners look at opportunities like that, they could really grow their portfolios.
Cool. All right. So I want to take us all the way to South Korea and the Swimming World Championships. FINA, the sports governing body, has issued warnings to Australia's Mack Horton and Britain's Duncan Scott for refusing to share the podium with Chinese swimmer Soon Young. Soon was suspended in 2014 for taking a banned heart medication. More recently, he's accused of making testers wait outside his home for more than an hour, refusing to give a urine sample, and then he, or probably his bodyguard, apparently smashed the blood sample so it could not be tested. The case is being appealed, and Soon is allowed to compete in the meantime. And the other athletes are making sure that everyone remembers what Soon is accused of doing. USA Today's Nancy Armour calls it a rebellion. Bob Bowman, best known for coaching Michael Phelps all those years, says, quote, "When prominent athletes speak up, that's when real change can happen." Rachel, what do you make of all this?
Well, I have to say these Swimming World Championships are the most dramatic I can recall in recent memory. But this is really just an extension of a trend we're seeing, I think, across sports where athletes are really speaking out and they're frustrated at the lack of true punishment after doping violations. There's a group called Global Athlete that was founded in the past year, really as a reaction to a lack of sanctions after the 2014 Russian doping scandal in Sochi. I think it's actually a good sign that you're seeing athletes sometimes make some noise and be disruptive because they feel like, hey, if we don't have basic fairness in our sports, then what do we have? You know, what becomes of us?
Yeah, there's this sort of unwritten thing in sports in which it goes back to refereeing. If you aren't going to control the game, the players are going to take matters into their own hands to control it. I do, however, worry at times in these issues if there is not a bit of xenophobia that can take place in terms of, you know, oh, Chinese swimmers always do this, so we're going to show them up. That's always a concern to me. However, I think for the most part that these swimmers are just, they're not out of line, and I think they're motivated by the fact that they want better leadership and a fairer pool, essentially.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman and The Washington Post's Jerry Brewer. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.